Welcome to our session. Thanks for joining us that early in the morning. My name is Heike Ritter. I'm a product manager in the Windows commercial team. And we already did some work. So we created a service called Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection. And in this session, actually, we will walk you through an actual attack that happened last year. We will then take you inside an attack. We will investigate and see how Windows Defender can detect those kind of breaches on networks, and then in the end, show how it affects you. So I'm not doing all of this alone. I'm joined by Michael, please.
Thank you. I'm Michael Shalev with Windows Cyber Defense Team, the team that wrote Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection, or as we'll call it from now on, Windows Defender ATP. So I want to take you into an attack that happened last year, and this is what we call an advanced attack. Now, an advanced attack is one that is not your run-of-the-mill malware that's being distributed by spam. In this case, it's done by a team or a group that we call Strontium. And Strontium is interested in targeting government and diplomatic personnel. Now, when you think about it, government and diplomatic personnel are kind of security aware, and they're very cautious in their online lives. So how is it that Strontium is able to target them? And the answer is that Strontium uses open source intelligence to actually build profiles about each victim. And then what they'll do is they'll tailor a lure or a socially engineered email or a spear phish to actually try and get them to compromise their machines. Now, our hunters, who are reverse engineers and threat analysts, caught whiff of some activity by Strontium that was happening across the globe last year. And what you see here is sightings that we've seen with our optics of attempted infections of endpoints and actual successful ones. And with that, what they did was, for example, a diplomat who's stationed in the Middle East received an email about troop movement in Central Africa, which is really a topic that he covers as part of his job. Now, looking at it and reading it, it doesn't have the typical misspellings, and actually it's very pertinent, and he sees a URL that is very familiar to him. When he clicks on it, he's taken to a site that he's actually visited before. But at this point, compare Eurasia Review with the actual URL that you see on the left of the red arrow, which is Eurasia Global News. What's happened here is that Strontium has spoofed a website. And in addition to hosting the original content that they took from Eurasia Review, they also are hosting a flash zero day. Now, a zero day is a vulnerability that hasn't been published, and therefore it hasn't been patched. And in this way, you're able to compromise software before the vendors actually know about it and can secure against it. Let's look at another example. So Strontium's also looking for NATO. But sending NATO something about North Africa, about Central Africa, won't really generate interest. So here, the phish is tailored to NATO's relations with Ukraine. And here we see another one of Strontium's techniques, and that is social engineering and tricking the user into actually installing their kit by saying, this is really a Java runtime. So if we want to look at the stages of what a Strontium zero-day based attack are. It starts with the initial exploit, where the victim is directed at a spoofed website. There, through a vulnerability that hasn't been patched yet in Flash, the kernel mode exploit is downloaded, and what this does is it installs the backdoor and registers it for persistence. And finally, it can even download a credential dumper like Mimikatz for Windows 7 or some other binaries to help progress the attack. And now let me hand over to Heike, who will actually take you inside such an attack.
Yeah, so kind of similar an attack that he just explained, leveraging a zero day and then dropping files and getting persistent on the machine. That's what I'm going to show you now. So it's actually a recorded video because we are not doing like live hacking here on stage. So I think that's nothing they want us to do. Just that you know, that's a fully patched Windows 10 machine at that point. IV solution is running. It was difficult for us to find actually something that we can show with Windows 10 because we added so much security, we implemented many, many new technologies. So we are leveraging a vulnerability in, and it was a flash 0 day. It has been fixed, all good. So you're good if in case you're worried now. So let's start. So Liz is our victim on the left side. On the right side is the Ektos machine. So you can see that Liz is opening an email, and this email is from her boss about a new opportunity. She works in sales, and she double clicks on the attachment. So this actually now leverages this 0 day. Like it's downloading and installing. No, it's downloading and executing a file on her machine, and that's what you can see now. Wait a second. So you can see on the right side that the file, when it got executed, started PowerShell and opened a connection to the attacker's machine. At this point, actually, I would already say it's the attacker has the full control of her machine. She doesn't see anything. She's like still scrolling in the email looking for the good opportunity. So what you see next is that the actor is uploading another file on her system. It's called sysdebugger. He uploads it, and it's successfully uploaded. And after that, he is now gaining persistence by adding a registry entry. And then every time the machine boots up again, he's there again, and he can do whatever he wants. So the next thing that he's going to do is he uploads another file. It's a port scanner. Well-known port scanner, and he can then, of course, he will use some well-known tools like Who Am I, Netlog on Server, just to figure out a little bit more about the person that he is at the moment or on the machine that he is, and then he will use this information with the port scanner together and then start moving from one machine maybe to the next. So the entire attack took probably less than a minute, and he can now start moving on and doing whatever he wants. So you've seen there's no malware involved. It's quite, machine.
Go.
So how should a security solution just protect this? Even a firewall, I mean, the firewall blocks probably traffic that comes in, traffic that goes out, but that was just a regular HTTP, HTTPS connection. So it's nothing that the firewall would usually block. So it's very, very challenging for a security team to block those kind of attacks. So this is why we developed Windows Defender ATP, and what it is, it comes like it's composed of three parts. It's a client-side sensor, it's a behavioral sensor that collects all kind of forensic information and send them to the cloud. In the cloud, we do all the logic, so all the security machine learning happens in the cloud, and it's enriched and enhanced by our community. We have threat intel, our own threat intel, but also third-party threat intel. And of course, we have humans. We at Microsoft have security experts that are experts in exploit techniques, operating security, but also the cyber crime unit. So people that are hunters and looking after those actors all day long and trying to see where like new malicious URLs coming up or IP addresses that are luring to a bot. So if we look at the architecture, and that's kind of important because it's a cloud solution and people would like to know what about my data and the privacy and everything. So we have the client always on endpoint. It's coming with Windows 10 next. It's off by default, so it's not collecting and sending us stuff. So you have to sign up and onboard to the service to then actually turn all the agents on and send the data to our cloud. So it's also there to collect forensic files in case a file was involved here. and then it will help you, the agent, to do further remediation in the future. So that means if there is something on the box and you don't want it on the box, you can actually get rid of it. So, and then we have the cloud solution. So this piece that you can see here now in the middle is one customer. It's one tenant in Azure. So every customer has its own storage in Azure. All the data that we collect will just go in the storage or like in the tenant of the customer. If we do all the big analysis in the, like in our cloud, I would say, in the, we will remove all personal information from the files, from the logs, from whatever you collected, and it will be anonymized before it actually leaves this container here in the middle. In the middle, what we have is a huge dictionary of IOAs and IOCs. He will talk a little bit, what is this, in case you don't know all the acronyms. And as well as we provide a file and URL detonation service. Detonation means you can send a file to a virtualized secure environment and just let it run and see what happens, and we give you a deep report. The file can create connections, the file can gain persistence by editing the registry. Like, everything the file does will be recorded and you can have a look at it. And every customer has its own file detonation service because it's still personal data that's in the box here. Yeah, and then it's enriched, as I said, by our community, Threat Intel, Microsoft Threat Intel, and then as well as the Hunter. So every time you can see some arrows that are going away from your from the middle box, it's anonymized. So even our Hunters, they only have access to non-personalized data. So and now we have the sensor, we have the data, how, what do you get? So you get a dashboard and a portal where you can do all the investigation. So alerts will show up in case we can actually see an attack on your network, and then you get all the behaviors that brought us to the conclusion that this is an attack. And if you have your own security information event management system, SIEM, then you can also get a connector and then get all the alerts shown up in your own existing solution. So why do we think at Microsoft that we are in a unique position to actually offer such a service? So I think we as Microsoft, we have a huge and a challenging network. When I joined Microsoft 8 years ago, I was so surprised. I was admin on my corporate machine at Microsoft. You know, I was proud. I was finally employed by this company, and then I got this machine, and I was admin. I could install everything. I could uninstall everything. So that was not nothing that I was used to from my previous company. So, and then, like, we have 1 million machines, and everyone is admin. And we have people in marketing that have no idea what they're doing. And then we have people and like engineers and developers, they might know what they do, but not, you know. So something can happen on the machine, and we need to make sure our code is protected, our assets are protected. So we also have, of course, new code and new files. We are coming up on the network every single day. We have malware researchers, they're playing with malware and trying to block it. And so we can't just stop them with their work. We have to really understand what is good, what is bad. What is a normal behavior, maybe on this machine? What is an abnormal behavior in this team? And yeah, labs, and so we have a lot. So, and then we also have a lot in the cloud, where we get all the data. So we have Hotmail, we have Bing indexing tons of URLs every single day. So we know when a new URL shows up, and maybe it's the first time, and it's in an, I don't know, like it's someone get lured to this URL for the very first time, so it looks suspicious, and we will probably look after that. We have millions of files detonating every day through Office 365, for instance. Our customers, there's another service, it's called Exchange Online Advanced Threat Protection. It's another mouthful of word, where our customers can actually detonate email attachments and URLs coming in. So we have Windows Defender, our anti-malware solution that is for consumer, but also for commercial, like for customers, enterprises. And every, like, I think it's like 2 billion people downloading the malicious software removal toolkit every month, and we get data out of the reports that shows us what are new threats and what's going on the machines. And then the 11 million enterprise machines are customers running Windows Defender managed through SCEP, System Center Endpoint Protection, and they have the cloud protection turned on. So that means they send us the files in case there's no signature on the box for a specific file, but the file got marked as downloaded from the web. So we want to make sure it's not malicious, and they send it to our cloud. And then we have hunters, and we have experts, but I talked about them already. So this is, I think, why Microsoft is in a unique position, and how we now put all this together and show you our knowledge is something that Michael is going to show us in the portal and the dashboard of Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection.
Thank you very much, Heike. So now let's see how we're taking all of these global optics as well as the behaviors and the signals that we're collecting from the enterprise endpoints. And as usual for Microsoft, we're now in Contoso, which is the company that Lizbeen works for. And Contoso's security analysts, or their SecOps, can enter a portal. And in the portal, what they see is they'll see an overview of alerts that we've raised, what severity they are they high, medium, low. We can see which machines are at risk based on those alerts. We can see how many machines are reporting. We can see where the advanced threats are located across the globe for Contoso, et cetera. So now let's actually go and see how we can.
I wanted to talk about this a little bit.
So now let's see what we're seeing in terms of what happened on Lizbeen's box. So on the dashboard, we saw that there was an alert on a NeuroBlaze attack. And if we click on that alert, we're able to see that Windows Defender ATP has seen a set of behaviors that we attribute to NeuroBlaze. Now, at this point, the Contoso SecOps might be saying, OK, but who's NeuroBlaze? And all they have to do is really click on the name of the actor. And what we're providing is a threat intelligence profile of that actor, who they are, how long we've seen them, who they're interested in, what their tools and techniques, how they operate, where they're active across the globe, if there are any recommended defenses we can tell the users about, et cetera. They can also download a much more detailed report for reading offline, but right now, they have to deal with an attack on their network. So going back to that, we're seeing here evidence that's associated with that alert. But actually, let's go to Lizbeen's box, because this alert on the attack happened on her box. So by clicking on Lizbeen's box, what we're able to do is actually go to her machine. And Windows Defender ATP is really like a flight recorder or a black box. So all the behaviors that occur on an endpoint are logged and sent to the cloud, where they're processed and analyzed. And then we're able to tell the story and provide context for what we've seen recorded on that box. So here, step by step, we can see all the stages that Heike showed us earlier in terms of the attack. We can see Outlook dropping and executing a file. A PE is a portable executable. Then we can see a suspicious PowerShell command. Then we see a reverse shell. Now, the reverse shell is the technique whereby the attacker can remotely take control of the machine and actually start uploading files. Then we see the ASAP, the auto start extensibility point. This is where you register a file to be restarted, to be launched every time the machine is restarted. Because what's the good of a back door if after they reboot it, it's locked? Finally, we see the alert on NeuroBlaze, and after that we see that there was a port scanning attack. So these alerts are great, but we really want to understand more about what happened on the box, because we have to investigate and understand, is this a real attack? And if so, how has it affected my company? So here we see the Outlook dropped and executed a PE file, and we see that the file that was downloaded is install.exe. Now, if we look at the underlying behaviors, we can actually see down here the behavior, or actually the event, where Liz is opening the attachment. Now, that is followed by another behavior, where we're seeing that Outlook is downloading a PE file and writing it under the users folder. Now, the important thing here is that we're providing the entire process tree. So if you were to look at a log at the security log, then you'd be able to see isolated events. So you could see that Outlook ran install exit, but you would not see the entire context going up. This is going to be much more important as we proceed in understanding this attack. Finally, the last part of it was Outlook downloaded that install exit, and it also launched it. It ran it. So let's go back up the timeline, and we call this the machine timeline, and look at our next alert. The next alert is about a suspicious PowerShell command running on the machine. So let's jump immediately into the behavior. And what we're seeing here is that on PowerShell, we're seeing that a command line is being run in a hidden window. And what's much more interesting is it's actually an encoded command line that the attacker is using to decode at runtime on the machine. Now, if we were to look in the event log, the most we could see is that PowerShell was running this and perhaps that it was launched by command exe. But given the ability of Windows ATP to process and analyze all of the events and behaviors that happened on the machine, we can provide a process tree of the entire execution path and see that this is actually Outlook that ran install that used command.exe to run a batch file to run PowerShell. So now we know, proof positive, that this PowerShell command was run as part of the attack because it was run by install.exe. Let's move up. Here we see that a potential reverse shell was detected. Again, if I look at the event log, what I'm going to see is that command.exe is the one doing it, and I'm able to see the IP address that it's calling out to. But if I open the underlying behavior, once again, I see that install.exe is the one behind the reverse shell. And here I can actually see the command line that they're using to open this communication back to the attacker's IP address. Now, the next part of the attack, now that we have a reverse shell, is uploading the backdoor and establishing persistence. So first, we're able to see that PowerShell, and again, this is install.exe, is actually uploading or downloading onto the machine two files, sysdebugger and slexe. So let's take a minute and see what we can know about sysdebugger. So Windows Defender ATP provides a profile that is collated both from what we know globally about a file, where we've seen it in the world through MSRT, through Defender, through SmartScreen, or any other of our services. And opposed to that, what's the view within your enterprise? So we can contrast the two. So here we're able to see that this file only appeared 12 times worldwide. Now remember, we're looking at over a billion machines. So this is a very low prevalence file. Furthermore, we're seeing it appearing twice in Contoso. This leads the SecOps to understand that this isn't some broad spam campaign. This is probably an advanced attack. One of the features that Heike mentioned before was the detonation or the deep analysis. And here you're able to either submit a file to the cloud to be analyzed. And here we'll just look at a previous analysis that was run over the file. Now, what deep analysis tells us is classes or categories of behaviors that were observed when executing this file in a cloud sandbox that is open to the internet but also heavily instrumented. So we're able to see that this file uses an encrypted channel to communicate. We see that this file is aware of its environment, so it wants to understand domain information, hardware information, host information, et cetera, which is also very typical of an attacker who's now mapping the landscape and trying to see where he's going to move next. We also see multiple cases where this file established persistence. And remember, if the attack is over the minute the user reboots their machine, then the attacker has done nothing. They want to be there for a long time. And finally, we see that this file also injects into system processes. I'll come back to this at the end. So without leaving their console, Contoso SecOps were able to see what's happening on the machine. They're able to understand what this file is capable of and really start expanding a forensic investigation within Windows Defender ATP. Let's go back for a second to the machine and finally look at the last alert on this machine, which is the port scanner. So as Heike noted, right before that was raised, the attacker lived off the land, as we say. and actually used Who Am I to try and understand a bit more about their environment. But if we now look at the port scanner, which is that second file that the attacker uploaded, sl.exe, now we can see another one of the aspects that Windows Defender ATP provides the organization, and that's our footprint service. So what we're able to see is we're able to see not only the worldwide prevalence, and here we see that this is a rather common tool because it's been seen on thousands of machines worldwide, but we're able to see where else in the organization this file was observed. So remember, each endpoint has a behavioral logger, and if this file was created on that machine or if this file was executed on that machine, that behavior will be forwarded for cloud analysis. So now, as part of SecOps, I'm saying, wait, what if this attacker actually managed to get off the box? So let's go look at another machine, one belonging to SummerFrost. And what we're able to see on SummerFrost's machine, and this is yet another one of the abilities that Windows Defender ATP provides, is what is the user context each of the process trees was running under? So we see system processes, we see SummerFrost's user, that's okay. Suddenly we see Lizbean's logon user on this machine on the same day of the attack. So this leads Contoso SecOps to start expanding the scope of breach in their investigation and start mapping where any of the files that have been seen in common have been observed on the in the organization. So that brings us back to Windows Defender ATP, and now I want to tell you a bit more about what we do with those. So the alerts that we use are based on two terms, if you will. Indicators of compromise, and Heike mentioned this earlier. And indicators of compromise are really what we know and who it belongs to. So this is the known. And so what we do is we have a threat intelligence database that is compiled out of everything we know and everything our partners in threat intelligence know. And so if we see any of these indicators in an organization, then we know who's there. So I didn't want to spoil this earlier, but we name our actors after the periodic table, so after elements. Each company has their own cute way of doing things. So if we want to look at the actor we were looking at the beginning, at Strontium, and say, okay, what IOCs do I know are associated with Strontium? Here we can see a whole set of the tools they use for different attack stages, be it elevation of privilege, backdoors, etc. In addition, we also collect the spoof domains. And so if we see any communication from a machine, even going out over a system file, so if SVC host beacons out or calls out to one of these domains or IPs, we're able to raise an alert and say, we have an indicator that NeuroBlaze, or in this case Strontium, was on your box. Now, what you know is great, but advanced attackers are really well-funded, they're sophisticated, they have 0 days. So a 0 day, by definition, is not contained in what we know. So what we have to do is expand what we know to what or whom we don't know yet. And for this, we've decided to depend on behaviors. And so Windows Defender ATP has an ever-growing library or dictionary of indications of attack. And what these are behaviors that we associate with different attack stages. So we have behaviors that are typical of exploitation. We have behaviors that are typical of command and control, the reverse shell that we saw, credential stealing, in case you're on a Windows 7 box, or if it's on a box that, for whatever reason, wasn't patched, and we actually identify some sort of form of credential stealing, recon, so we're looking for port scanners, and lateral movement. So in this way, we're able to actually go and say, we'll not only monitor your networks for what we know, and if a new IOC or IOA comes out, we'll also go back in time over the data that's been collected from your organization and tell you, we only now know that this is an IOC, but it was here a week ago, and now you can go and investigate it. So this is really the underlying way in which Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection is able to monitor actors and new actors, known techniques and new techniques. And I'll hand back to Heike to bring it all together.
Yeah, another marketing slide. So what Windows Defender ATP offers you or gives you is, so you have seen the dashboard and you have seen the portal. So it will raise alerts and we will actually separate the alerts from all the noise for you. So you have, of course, filter options. If you want to see more, you can see more. But usually, we really just show what's important to you so that you can just focus on that, because that's the challenging part. You might have many, many security solutions deployed, and they all give you logs, and they all give you events and whatever, but it's tons of information, and you have to go through them. So you have really correlated alerts and also actionable alerts. So we give you information, recommendations, what you should do when, for instance, there was this NeuroBlaze attack and next to it, I don't know, leave the house, burn it down, shut down the server, I don't know what. Like, usually it's probably something different, but you got it. Steps that you should do when you have this actor on your network. It's real time. So you get the alerts in your SIEM or on this portal in real time. So when we get the data from the client, it shows up there. But also, as Michael said, depending on your retention policy, we can go back in time. So you can pick 3 or 6 months. It depends on how much data you want to store in Azure. And then and we see something that we know now, that we figured out and learned about now, and you got it a month ago or two, we will still, of course, give you information about something that happened before. It's easy to investigate. I don't want to call the portal as easy, because it's a very complex and difficult portal built in the back end, but it's easy for you to investigate. You can start from an alert, you have seen it, and then go to the machine, go to the user, and we make it easy for you that you have the timeline and where you can actually just pick the time that you want to look at. So easy for you to investigate and explore, but you can also do, I love this word, self-hunting. Like, if you always wanted to be a hunter, now you can do self-hunting in this portal. You see a file on your network, you want to know more about a machine on your network, just search for it, and we give you everything that we know about this file, about this machine on your network. And of course, use all the threat intel that we provide you. So he never clicked on the report, on the full report, but I love this report. So I'm reading them, even though for me they're like, okay, nice, it's a UL. So they give you all the information, what those guys are doing and how they're doing it. Like sample emails, all the URLs that they are using to lure people to, for instance. There's one, it's Google, but instead of the O, you have a zero, double zero, and stuff. So it's very detailed information that you can use from those reports. If you want to look at one of those reports, actually, we published one, the Strontium one. It's the August Security Intelligence Report, and you can get more information how those threat intel or like the actor profiles look like. Did I forget anything here?
No, you're going fine, keep on going.
Go. So we built Windows 10 as the most secure operating system ever. And we've actually added technologies. Like, this time it was really completely new design from the ground up. So we added some virtual-based security technologies where we, for instance, Credential Guard is one of the technologies that leverage this technology, where we make it impossible to use pasty hash mitigation for like those techniques, because we store credentials in a virtual environment where nobody can, that can't be compromised, as well as Passport, Microsoft Passport. We go away from passwords at all, and we use kind of certificate-based authentication. So you have a private key, public key, or we use biometrics as your sign-in option. Windows Hello, fingerprint, we saw banned in case someone was at the session on Wednesday, so that's another second factor authentication or biometric authentication that we can use. So let's start from the first bucket, so device integrity or device protection. So device health attestation is a service in the cloud where we measure, see if your device got compromised when you booted up, for instance, and there are some malicious things going on, like the hashes are not correct anymore. So this is a service in the cloud that you can leverage. Device guard. Device guard here at the device, in this section, it's kernel mode, code integrity, and you can configure your machines with device guard that only signed code can run. So everything else is gone, and you can't even let it run. So that limits many attacks already. So if you say only my line of business application signed by this authority can run, so you actually exclude everything else. Of course, we have security policies, control, device controls, so that you can turn off and on some hardware components and all of this. So if we move to the identity protection, as I mentioned, we have built in two-factor authentication that you can leverage. You can lock down your devices that only this application can run, or the user has the permissions are very restricted and limited for the user. Credential guard, as I mentioned, to protect your credentials, passport, and Windows Hello. So next one is information protection. I think the most important one here is EDP, Enterprise Data Protection. I don't know if you've seen it yesterday. It's now finally available for all Windows Insiders. You can check it out, test it out. We also have documentation uploaded on TechNet, like how you can try it and use it. You need Microsoft Intune or System Center or any other to actually configure it. What does it do? Enterprise Data Protection is a seamless way for the user to separate private data from corporate data. So you know maybe other solutions, but they're all like container and you're like inbox, and if you want to do something private, you have to go out of this container and go in another container, and then you have to go back, and here it's very complicated for the user. And here it's built into Windows, it's seamless. You can configure what are my applications that I want to produce and create company content. Let's say you have your SAP application. So I will never ever do something private in SAP and print a private report. So this is a line of business application. Everything that comes out there is protected automatically. Or you can set your network boundaries and you can say everything that I download and upload from those IP addresses or from this domain, as well as it's another application, OneDrive for Business. Like, you can configure whatever you want, and everything is protected. As a developer, you want to make sure that your application fits into this EDP technology, of course, as well. So we give you guidance and how you can enlighten the applications and make sure that you give the user either the choice to create private or company content, or you just restrict them to to do one or the other. Conditional access, you can configure that a user can only access certain resources if the device is up to date, the latest antivirus solution is running, the signatures are up to date, firewall is turned on, or the user is member of this group. So you can configure many, many different ways with conditional access to only grant access to specific users or devices. Device protection, device encryption, we have BitLocker for enterprises, we have device drive, I don't know how it's called, for consumer. So, and then when it comes to threat resistance, he mentioned it already, we have smart screen, UL reputation, where we can see bad and good URLs, and it will block you, and it will make it very difficult for you to actually access websites, and we can leverage with Windows Defender this information. App Locker to lock down your device as well. Device Guard here again, make sure your applications are signed and you configure Device Guard actually the right way so that only those kind of applications are running. Windows Defender, and we have firewalls and networks. So Windows Defender is a signature-based malware solution, so even though the product that we just showed you earlier has something similar in the name, it's not an anti-malware solution. So it's a similar name, it's a brand, but it's not signature-based virus detection. So this is all pre-breach. But people make mistakes. And those actors outside, they're getting more sophisticated. You might configure something not the right way. You didn't turn this on. Or there is a 0 day, so they will always come back. Or there will always be a new one. It's not only Microsoft technologies that have vulnerabilities. You have other applications running on your network, and they've found a hole in one of those technology solutions. So this is why we added a new layer to the Windows 10 defense stack, the post-breach layer. So we also make now Windows 10 more secure after you got breached with Windows Defender ATP. And so if you think of, we do everything and we make it really hard for anyone to breach your network, but it might happen, and many people forget to configure. It's also not always very easy to implement those technologies. I mean, Device Guard, imagine, the solution is great, but it takes the company a while to sign all the applications and make sure that only code is running signed by the certificate. You can't just turn it on from one day to the next. It will take some time. So with that, give some call to action, please.
Okay. So we're at build. So this has to be relevant for you. So I think we mentioned this at the beginning. I'm not sure we stressed it. Microsoft defends itself and its network with Windows Defender ATP. And given the challenging environment that we have, there are few things that we haven't seen. And so what we're doing here is sharing some of the things that we and our customers will now be able to see, even if before with standard anti-malware and defense layers, you weren't seeing this stuff. Now it's going to be evident, it's going to be alerted on, and it might even be blocked. So you really have to adhere very closely to integrity and code signing. On some of our customers, we've seen cases where really large household name vendors, there are cases where not everything's code signed. And before, it flew under the radar, but now it's being alerted on. And we're making resources available, telling you how to do this, complete information, terms of secure hashing. If you want to encrypt, do cryptographic network operations, do it the right way. Do it with SSL. Do it standard. Follow standard procedures. In terms of suspicious behaviors, remember, the name of the game for us and for anyone working in this space is detecting the unknown. So we all cover IOCs, that's great. It's the IOAs that are differentiators, and they're the ones that really help level the playing field. So don't code inject, because we're going to alert on it. And customers don't like it. And when you think about it, some of the practices that might be easy or quick to implement, if the customer is aware of it and aware that this is really a breach, they will be very unhappy and they'll call you and ask you to fix it. In terms of threat modeling, in terms of threat surface analysis, attack surface analysis, in terms of using security design patterns. So the mother load, it all begins at SDL. So if you go to aka.ms/SDL, there's tons there. MSDN has a lot more. We make available a free threat modeling tool, an attack surface analyzer, because one of the things that you need to understand is that even if you're a small ISV, a medium ISV, a large ISV, you're also a target. And this can come at you from your hotel's Wi-Fi network. That was Dark Hotel. It also happened in Europe last year. Another thing is, don't be cute. So in terms of naming, attackers name their stuff Skype.exe, GoogleTalk.exe. They try and install themselves as a Flash installer, or as a Flash player, or as a Flash updater. And they try and ride on coattails of known and trusted applications. We're monitoring for that. Finally, attackers are looking for innovative ways to breach large customers. The stronger the customer's defenses are, the more innovative they get. So in the target case, they actually targeted a small vendor who doesn't have the resources to stand up sufficient defenses. So this call to action is for every size of developer, because even though it's commonly said that there ain't no such thing as a free lunch, spoiler alert, Milton Friedman did not come up with this. We are making all of these resources and more available freely to you because we want to help make sure that you don't become someone else's lunch. Thank you very much.
So we have time for questions, and we have time to fill out the evals, please. There's a question. Hello, Mike. So you mean the agents? Yeah. Yes.
Yes. So it's part of the anniversary release of Windows 10, and when that server SKU comes out, it will be on that as well. No, I mean, I think that this one of the last slides that Heike showed on the multi-layered defense that is baked into Windows 10 is such that we're focusing on making it the most secure operating system ever. And I think a good evidence or vote of confidence is the DoD's announcement that they're moving 4 million machines by end of year, simply because they understand that the farther you try and patch back, the more doors you might leave open. So we're looking forward. Windows 10, yeah. Forward.
So, I mean, that says it all, yeah. Was there another question?
We're blinded here, so we can't see if you are standing up.
So,
there it is.
Okay.
There we go. There too.
Oh.
So, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
So Windows Defender ATP is really an enterprise solution, and as such, part of the security that we build into it is opacity. But if you follow the security designs and you adhere to the baselines, then you're going to be good. You don't have to try and reverse engineer us. Okay, if you behave well, then you'll show up as behaving well. It's the misbehaviors that we catch.
Okay, just one more question.
Sure.
Let's say I want to be preemptive. Is there a way to kind of see what sort of actors might be acting like within my region, or do I only get information after the breach happened,
So in general, we provide threat intel on data that's observed within an enterprise. So there are, we have partner threat intelligence companies whose business is saying, we'll give you threat intelligence on the world and you can decide if it relates to you. What we found in Microsoft and in our early preview customers is the main problem is there's too much noise. So they have multiple systems deployed, and the SIM is getting hit with one of the large financial institutions we talked to. They're talking about 20 events a second. And it's like, okay, what do I focus on? I mean, we don't want to put our enterprises on in ADHD, right? So what we're doing is we're actually correlating and picking out the events and alerts that are actionable and pertinent to the organization. Because at the end of the day, the SecOps has so much to do, and they want to focus on the top priorities first. So we're not a threat intel service where we'll say, oh, you want to read on actors across the world, et cetera. We have a lot of, there are partners and companies out there. This is their business.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. So that's something that we're sort of considering. The thing is this. The power of Windows Defender ATP is we see the world. We see everyone. And so coming up with an IOA that doesn't start to false positive or FP is a very delicate process. And we base it on a lot of cloud analytics and machine learning and a lot of deep knowledge. That said, going forward, we will be adding functionality to allow organizations to monitor for certain things.
Yeah.
The second question was, there's a lot of cool detection features that are running in the cloud as a service. Are there any plans to open up any APIs to leverage those on other platforms?
What do you mean by other platforms? Right. Right. So. Right. So. Since our behavioral sensor is built into the core of Windows 10, if you try to observe signals from other platforms, you don't have the behavior logger there. So it would be very difficult to be able to correlate and put together the story and the process trees and all of that.
So for now, it's Windows 10, and we are collecting feedback from customers. And if there's more need and more requirements for, let's say, other platforms, older operating systems, we learn from feedback. Thank you. So right now we're targeting enterprise customers just because they have security people being able to probably work with the portal and everything. So, but there's work in progress where there's this partner portal in Office, for instance, where a partner offers a smaller company to take care of the Office deployment and such. So we are working on kind of a managed portal here as well, where then a security company can offer the service to smaller companies and take care of the files. Because, I mean, you can purchase it as a smaller company as well, but who looks at the files?
Okay, thank you. So, two parts to the answer. The first part is each customer. Okay, the question was who decides what gets sent to the cloud? So, let's answer the first part, which is the cloud. So, as Heike mentioned, each customer is running in its own tenant. So their data is isolated, and they can even select when onboarding where they want to geolocate. So if you're in the EU and you're sensitive about that, you're going to geolocate to Azure in the EU, okay? So the data is isolated and kept within that customer's tenant. Secondly, the files that you're able to upload are only portable executables, okay? And as Heike mentioned, if as part of the heavier analytics, some sort of broader MapReduce or other jobs are run over them, the data is completely anonymized. So what's going to exit that customer's tenant is going to be hashes. It's not going to be anything that is identifiable. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
kind of.
And notice that the customer has to decide to submit a file for detonation. So yeah. Windows Defender ATP does not collect files automatically. Okay? It's the customer owns their data, and we reflect all of that data back to the customer through the portal. It's only a cloud solution simply because
we need the global
optics, and we're cloud first, mobile first.
Okay.
Thank you. If it is not being secured with a signed certificate or in some standard way, then it will be flagged. It will be flagged. You might inform your customers and sort of say, this is us, this is what we're doing and why we're doing it, but you're going to get hit with the question of why aren't you doing this securely with a certificate, et cetera. So lightweight is one thing. Secure is becoming, I think, a bit more, because if some way an actor is able to leverage your protocol, then what's keeping the enterprise safe, right?
Okay. So stable.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. You said the sensors can be used for getting all the data is integrated into Windows itself?
Into Windows 10. So the way, again, due to security and other considerations, the data from the center, from the loggers or from the agents is going up into the customer's cloud tenant. There are APIs for the customer from that cloud tenant to call some of the data. But it's all going to be against the cloud within the compliant and security that Azure offers.
And not for the agent on the box.
Yeah, so you can't go to the agent, you can go through the cloud.
Okay, there was a list of events. For example, the application tried to obtain the main logon client for the various domains. How do you query these information when at the same time you suggest that
so in general,
repeat the question.
Okay, so you were asking on if another company wanted to implement a similar solution, could they do it alongside?
Yes.
So yes, at this point, Windows Defender Advanced Threat Protection is reporting and it's detecting, and it'll run alongside any other security solution. Okay.
It also runs side by side with any AV solution, so it's not dependent on Windows Defender or something like this. So, and if you have more sensors on the box collecting some more forensic data, no problem.
If that didn't answer your question, then could you help focus your question a bit more?
Calls, structured looking mechanisms. So you prevent all security vendors from doing this.
Absolutely, yes. So it's not that we're using undocumented APIs, et cetera, and sort of taking an unfair advantage. No, it's part of the operating system. It's logging and monitoring behaviors, and it's forwarding these to the cloud.
So the APIs you are using are documented?
Yes. The APIs are documented, was the question.
But we're not publishing what our agent does.
We have secrets.
Anything else? Well, we're out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Please fill out the evals and have a great day.